For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Tazria is the Torah portion, and we're going to combine it with next week's Torah portion, Mitzorah, which usually are read together, as we mentioned, for the latecomers. So next week's class will be entirely on Pesach. So that's what we're kind of. And these two parshas are very much related. The theme is this very mistranslated, supernatural plague, if you will, disease, called Tzara'as. Now, there's more than just a few misconceptions and mistranslations in the Torah. Some of the more famous ones are an eye for an eye, which we already took care of that one and showed why it means monetary payment. And one of the other ones is this portion, Tzara'as, which is always mistranslated into leprosy. Of course, and the other most famous one that we already discussed is also the Korbanos. A korban, which is translated as a sacrifice, the connotation, right, is that you're giving up some. It's just the opposite. It brings you close to God. So, Tzara'as, let's talk about this mistranslation, leprosy, because there is no such thing today as Tzara'as. It was not leprosy. It completely defied all forms of logic. For example, the way it was handled, if a person got this disease, so they had to be separated from the camp, separated from all people. Yet, when it came to the three festivals, they were allowed to be in Jerusalem. The time when there was the most people around, that wouldn't make sense if it was just a physical disease. Right? If the person's covered from head to toe with this thing, he's pronounced clean. But yet, if he has spots that have and spots that don't, he's pronounced impure. A lot of things that defy logic if it was a physical disease. How does Tzara'as come about on a person? Well, Tzara'as, the Talmud tells us, is a derivative, a play on words of Motzi Shem Ra, which for our sakes, in our language, Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, the sin for Lashon Hara was a person who was afflicted with Tzara'as. Interesting. Our Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, all three of them were stricken with this at one time or another. You know, three great people, right? So keep that in mind because it will give you an inclination of why we don't have it today. I'll explain. Moshe was struck with it when he was at the burning bush, right? And then asked to give some signs to Israel that they would believe him. They said, they will not believe me. He spoke Lashon Hara on Israel, on his level, right? So he stuck his hand. Hashem said, take your hand, put it inside your shirt, took it out, and he had this, Tzara'as, right? Miriam was struck with Tzara'as in the Parsha Ba'aloyscha for her, quote-unquote, Lashon Hara on her brother Moshe, right? Which isn't... needs to be discussed as well. And the one that's not really mentioned, but we learn it out from that incident, is Aaron. He was struck for an instant also, the same time Miriam was, because he was involved with her. Okay, but since he was the instigator, it stayed with her, and it was mentioned with her. So these three people, the great people, had it. David HaMelech had it. He had it for 6 months. You know, and some other great people had it. Okay. Now, that brings us to the following idea. Tzara'as was a disease for Lashon Hara. Now, as we know, a Kadosh Baruch Hu punishes like a father does to a child. It's not just a punishment, it's also a cure. Right? You don't punish your child because you're trying to get vengeance. You want to correct them. Right? Same thing a Kadosh Baruch Hu does with us. So that was the purpose of Tzara'as, right? So that was a cleansing, so to speak, and it was a correction. Now, the problem is that the big question everybody has on Tzara'as is that why don't we have it today? We certainly know how to speak Lashon Hara. We don't have any problem in that arena. And as a matter of fact, we're guilty of it probably, more than any other time. Right. So, listen to this insight. And the Ramban Nachmanides mentions this. And the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh also mentions this. It says, you don't find in our generations people having tsaras. He wrote this in his generation. Why? It says, because back then, basically he says, back then they were so holy, these people. You know, these people were so holy that they had spiritualized, sanctified their physicality. So what happened? They were so holy that let's say Lashon Hara was spoken, they did a sin, their physical body rejected it to the outside, and it manifests itself in the form of saras. Their body was so holy, right? So, that was in the earlier generation when they had such a holiness. But we do not spiritualize our physicality to that degree. We're not that holy, right? We don't have the ability to push the malady to the outside. Well, it manifests itself in a physical appearance. So, it comes out from this that we may all be walking around with an eternal saras, if you will. I mean, that's not true, but I'm just, you know, giving an example here, that the fact that these people showed a physical form of disease for this shows their greatness. Okay? While our body, you know, let's give this a different example. If you ever had any thoroughbred animals, right? You know, you got your good old mutt. You know, we had a mutt for 13 years, and we fed it table scraps. You know, everything. You know the story, right? And then you get one of these little, you know, Pekingese or cockadoos or whatever the dang things are called, right? The things that look like little stuffed rags, right? And you can only feed these things the finest food, you know? These things that cost $3 a can, you know, like whatever it is, right? And if you try to give them, which I did to my mom's dog once, some chicken schmaltz, you know, that's it. The thing's sick for 3 days. He enjoyed it. He had a smile on his face the whole time. But, right? Because it's a delicate, it's more delicate, right? So these people, that's a heck of an example to give, but these people on a higher level, right, they were very fine. So any coarse grub, sin, tuma, impurity, the body rejected it. We, who are coarse and grub, right, we're the mutts, right? So, another sin, our body is so full of impurity, and anyways, it doesn't matter. Like wearing white garments, the slightest stain shows up. But if you're already dirty, you know, one more stain, you're not going to tell the difference. Okay? So that's one misconception I wanted to do away with. Now, it says in chapter 13, verse 46, Badad Yashav, he will dwell alone. A person gets struggling, dwells alone. And we know the principle, this is from the Gemara in Erechin, the principle of Mida Keneged Mida. Anybody familiar with that term?
Measure
for measure is such a great thing. God punishes measure for measure that it made Jethro, a convert. Because the idea is that you see God's justice so directly. You see the payback. So immediately you see this divine supervision in the world. Okay? The Egyptians, right, tried to drown the Jewish male babies. Therefore, they were drowned in the river. You know, that measure for measure, right? Here, this person, he caused machloikis, conflict, argument between man and wife, between man and his friend, right? He caused division. He caused people to not dwell together in peace and harmony. Therefore, his punishment is badad yashav. He dwells alone outside of the three camps of Israel. Okay, that's the measure for measure, and that's supposed to tell him something. Okay, now, going on this thing, first of all, I want to just interject a fascinating Rashi in this Torah portion. Fascinating. Chapter 13, verse 4, Rashi says on the words, "V'amuk ein mar'e," it was deep and wasn't seen. Rashi's, it gives an unbelievable commentary. He says, you know, first of all, to explain that the greatness of this commentary, you know, Rashi doesn't comment on every verse in the Torah. Some verses he decides not to. Okay? And he always comes to explain the simple meaning of the verse. That's what he comes to tell us. So on this one, instead of just not giving a commentary, he says, Lo yadasi perusho. I don't know its meaning. I don't know its meaning. Now, to me, this hit me like a thunderbolt. I'll tell you why. Because if Rashi, to me, this is the greatest commentary on Rashi. Right? Because if he can write on this, I don't know its meaning. It means every other time he does write something, he knew its meaning. You understand? Like, it's a tremendous thing. It also shows this tremendous humility, which is the ultimate commentary on Rashi, that he can write. You know, no one, everybody has, no one can say, you ask people even the simplest things like directions. People cannot say, I don't know. They feel obligated to give you an answer about any subject in the world, right? Even if they don't know, because the ego can't say, I don't know. And then, therefore, you know, you're trying to get to Lenox Mall and you end up in Lubbock. You know, you're like, so at any rate, Rashi, no. He doesn't know something. He says, he thinks, like, there's something deep here. There's something here. I don't know what it is. That's the greatest commentary on Rashi. Yes. Oh, by the way, it's just interesting. You know, the Saras comes in three colors. Take your pick. You have your all white, you know, basically white spots. And the other thing is Yerarekis and Adamdam. Adamdam and Yerarek. Red, red, and a green, green. Again, I didn't see this anywhere, but red and green, it's just interesting. Those are the colors of their December 25th, and they're always hoping for a white one, right? So, I don't know. one of the lessons of Saras, though, seriously, one of the big lessons of Saras is that, you know, you'll ask, okay, that's fine, Lashon Hara, wonderful. So, one isolated incident of one isolated sin, it represents everything in life. What I mean is that the way this operated was the following. First of all, it came on a person's clothing, right? And if they ignored it, then pay attention that there's something wrong here. I did something wrong. Then it would strike the house. And if they still didn't get the message, it would strike their body. That's what the Talmud tells us. So, yeah. Okay. So, for us, the lesson is the following, that a person is not allowed to dismiss any discomfort or accident as being inconsequential. You know, just like an accident just happened. You know, if a person did that when it struck his clothes, then he gets another clop, right? Exactly. If it hit the person's clothing, if he hopped, he did tshuva, right? That was it. It was over with. But if he didn't and persist in whatever sin it was, and he just took this as an accident, right, then it would have a further manifestation on the house. And then further if it didn't work on the body. So our lesson is that in life, any time we're afflicted with something, whatever little source it is, or someone insults us, right, we always have to see setbacks or reversals, right, as a sign from Hashem that he wants us to examine our ways and remedy it. And if we do, then he doesn't have to bring on a further malady on us, okay? So that's the main thing. We have to take this from Moshe Feinstein. Everything that happens in life, you have to take it to heart, so worse will not come. Basically, your question is very legitimate. It says in today's day and era, we don't see this midah k'neged midah. In today's day and era, we don't see measure for measure. We cannot put together the affliction with, you know, our spiritual, what we're missing, right? However, and by the way, if we look at the very last Torah portion of this book, where it describes the rebuke and a series of curses that we should never know from, it talks about that Hashem, since we went casually, bikari, with God, you know, coincidental with God, our relationship, so he's going to be coincidental with us. That's the times we live in. What we can't put together, the sin with, the illness. Okay? So you're right. We're not holding by this. So what is the lesson for us? Okay, we may not be able to pinpoint it exactly, but at least the recognition that it's not an accident. It just didn't happen. And we tried to do tshuva. Okay, I don't know how to do tshuva specifically or what. I'll give some tzedakah. I'll try to the best of my human ability to think of something I sometimes we know. You know, sometimes if a person, you know, slipped up in an area of kashrus, they know dang well they should have really checked and they didn't, or, you know, or they did something else that they know is wrong 100%. Some things are obvious, so that you know right off the bat, you do tshuva for it. If it's a more generic thing, you can't figure it out, you know, you just cry from the bottom of your heart to Hashem, you know, I want to improve, I want to do better, and just a generic type of tshuva. Okay, but the whole thing is a sensitivity to the fact that I know this happened for a reason. Okay, I can't put together what it is. Okay, but I, you know, and I'm going to try to be better. And every now and then you will be able to, and other times you won't. So you get stuck, you say maybe a Tehillim, these cure-alls. I might say cure-alls, I mean, you know, generic tshuva. Okay? You try to daven a little better, you try to, you know, I know I've seen certain times I haven't made it to shul, you know, on time. And I barely make Shmoneh Esrei with the minyan. Sometimes I'm, you know, okay, so yeah, I know that's obviously if I really cared, I would have gotten up 10 minutes earlier, right? Wouldn't have had that problem or whatever it is. You know, we all can be, see certain things that we can improve on, okay? And there's certain signs. If a person has his eyes open, you get certain signs during the day. I remember once something happened, somebody insulted me or said something, they had it all out of perspective. They thought one thing about me is completely wrong. And I was wondering why, how such a misconception could occur. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. I had just done the very same thing the previous week to somebody else. You know, I didn't say anything, but, you know, I thought real bad of this person for something he did. And then I found out there was extenuating circumstances. And I was completely wrong. So sometimes you can see it. Okay, moving on. The way it's phrased throughout the Torah portions, this week and next week, is a nega tzaras. A nega means a plague. That's what a nega means. Okay, a nega means a plague, and tzaras is a supernatural disease. Okay? So, Raymond started to mention about when it hits a house. When it hits a house, it will manifest itself in these colors, red and green, and you have to tear down the house. Okay? So, if you think about this, this seems like a terrible thing, you know? You come in to Israel, you know, you fight these wars, you build up a house, you know, you fix it all up, you know, you just finished a major move, and all of a sudden, you got tzaras on the house, and you gotta tear it down to the last brick. And it seems terrible. It seems like a nega tzaras, a plague of tzaras. Well, two things you gotta know. One is that the Canaanites, and we're going to relate this to modern day, the Canaanites knew traditionally that we were going to conquer the land. So Rashi tells us they took their gold and silver and hid it in the walls of their house. They hid it in the walls of their house so we wouldn't get any benefit from it. God wanted us to have it. Okay? So what does he do? We thinks it's a nega, right? God turned on the house. What ends up? Huge fortune. What turned out to be some terrible turned out to be great. What started out to be terrible turned out to be great. Okay. So you'll ask the question, if God wanted us to give us the money, right, why couldn't he do it in a more dignified manner? Why do we have to go through the whole tzaras, right? To appreciate it better? Okay, that's one answer they give. That's a good answer, right? Plus the fact this person was guilty of something and he did the proper tshuva, okay? But another lesson for life and how it relates to us today is the following. It's that everything is from perspective. When we get struck by something, if we take it in the right light, Hashem can take the very tzaras and turn it into an oineg. He can take the very nega, the plague, and turn it into an oineg. Like oineg Shabbos, a pleasure. He can turn it into something good. The letters nega in Hebrew are the same letters as the letters oineg. That's nega. That's oineg. The same letters. Okay? And they have opposite meanings. Nega is a plague and oineg is a pleasure. Okay? So that's a tremendous lesson in life. And by the way, the last word is the same way. Atzeres. Atzeres is a holiday. Like Shmini Atzeres. Shavuos is referred to as Atzeres. It's a holiday. Right? And these same letters spell Tzaras. Okay? So the lesson is there. that what looks sometimes that we're trying to grow and do certain things, that we have to go through such troubles, a person can't find, a young lady or a young man can't find the right spouse, right? And they go through such years of heartache, or they're married and they can't have children, or whatever, or they have problems grazing their children, right? And they're going through what seems like a negatzaras, a plague of tzaras, right? But after years, that single person meets the right partner, or the people have a child and they appreciate it more. By the way, that's why all our patriarchs and all the matriarchs were barren. So they appreciate these special children that were, by miracle, right? It's all for a reason. What starts out to look like a nega, a plague, it all ends up for a oineg when you look back at it. And again, in our lives, we look back at certain things we had to go through. They turned out to build us up, our character, and we're better for it. It turned out to be an oineg at Saris. Okay? So that's the lesson here. Hashem Dafka wanted us to get the money in this fashion to teach us this lesson. There's going to be times in your life you're going to have setbacks. You're going to have mishaps. You're going to have things, and it's going to be a rough road. And you're going to question the ways of God. But know, if you take it right, and you absorb it, and you don't question, that Hashem will reward you for your act of faith and trust Him. And He'll turn the nega, tzaras, into an oineg, an atzeres. Okay? But another thing about this is, in a more generic sense, there's two ways to get close to God. You know, they say, how will Mashiach come here? The end of days, the ultimate redemption. You know what the Talmud says? The Talmud says basically one word. What do you think that word is? How will Mashiach come? Tshuva. We all do tshuva, right? Now how?
Everybody says, observe Shabbos, all Jews.
Okay, but that's basically tshuva concept, right? Tshuva means like we talked about in Purim, tshuva means a reacceptance of Torah, a recommitment, right? And Shabbos, why is Shabbos picked? Because Shabbos represents all the mitzvahs. You know, that's an acknowledgement God created the world. That's what it says. The Gemara says a person keeps Shabbos as if he kept all the mitzvahs. Okay? And by the way, it's interesting, when we talk about someone as a Shomer Mitzvahs, he's a Shomer Shabbos. That's the term that's used. He's a Shomer Shabbos. Which means he keeps the mitzvahs. Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so, tshuva is the way the Mashiach, the ultimate redemption, will come. Now, that will be one of two ways. Either on our own, we'll all do tshuva, right? Or, says the Talmud, Hashem says, I'll put somebody upon you as wicked as Haman, and you'll be forced to do tshuva. You'll do tshuva because you're about to be, destroyed, Chalila. That's the two ways. Now, this is parallel, by the way, to a big question that they have in the Talmud. The question is, two places it states when Mashiach will come. It says that Hashem has a destined time. So there's a destined, a specific time, and people try to calculate that time. We're not allowed to. The great people in the past try to calculate it. There's that time. Let's say, it's 57, 58, whatever it is, okay? Mashiach can come. And then another place it says Mashiach can come any day. Well, which one is it? Well, this is parallel to the tshuva process. If we do tshuva, Mashiach is here tomorrow. No problem. Right? That's what it means. We can bring Mashiach every day. And even if we don't do tshuva on our own, then Hashem will bring the redemption. His ways will be fulfilled. He'll bring the Mashiach when we do tshuva by force, by a Hashashana Muhammad or a Hitler, right? We'll do tshuva, and that'll be at that set time where Hashem says, it's enough. My children have suffered enough. Their redemption is going to come no matter what, no matter what level we're on. Of course, now we can bring it sooner. Okay? All right? You got it? This has a lot to do with Neged Saras. Don't you want to know why or how? Okay. Because there's two ways to get close to God. There is, right, Nega Saras, a plague, afflictions. There's no atheist in a foxhole. Right? A Haman comes upon you. The whole nation does a mass tshuva. Right? Because they're scared. Six-day war. A lot of people became bald tshuvas. Yom Kippur Day War. Right? That's not the preferred way, but it's good. Okay? That's Neged saras, when you get a plague, an affliction of saras, which represents any affliction in life, right? Any casualty that a person shouldn't know from, right? That's one way to get close to God. But a person can avoid that. A person can come close to God through oneg and atzeres. A yontav, a holiday. Oneg, the pleasure. Oneg Shabbos, the pleasure of doing mitzvahs. If a person comes close to God and does tshuva me'ava, a tshuva from love, of loving God and enjoying His Torah and mitzvahs and gets close to Him that way, right, then he can avoid. Hashem's going to want us close to Him either way. Right? That's the whole idea. We're His children. He loves you more than we love ourselves. He's not going to, you know, just like your child. You're going to, either way, it's going to be your child. You're never going to give it up. And if he gets distance from you, you're going to drag him back in one way or another. Right? So if he stays close to you, you don't need to schlep him by the hair close to you. Right? If he doesn't, you're going to schlep him. If we stay close to Hashem through Torah, mitzvahs, and holidays, atzeres, oneg, great! Hashem, that's what I want. I want you to be close to me. I want you to be my children. And if we forget that we're His children, we're the Am HaNivchar, we're the chosen people, right? We're His ambassadors on here, on earth. Then Hashem says, I have no choice. I got to remind you who you are. You forget who you are, I have to clap you. I have to give you a nega saras. And then we come back to Hashem. And more often than not, unfortunately, that's the method that is used upon us that we have to do. When things are going well, we come to a new country, instead of taking advantage of the freedom we have to get closer to Hashem, we get closer to the physicality of the world and the pleasures of the world, and we forget and we assimilate. Okay? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to bring this other way. So these are the two ways of coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Questions on this? Yes? Yeah, well, sure. You know, when we talk about these figures, 97% of Jews being assimilated and not Shomer Shabbos, but this is what this whole town's built on. You know, this whole shul is built on those 97% coming back. Okay, so that's a continual process. Right now we live in an interesting time. We have more people doing tshuva coming back than ever before. At the same time, we have more of an assimilation rate. It's a very, very interesting polarization of two things.
But it's the same.
They say this is, it's very similar to Hanukkah, the Hellenists, tremendous assimilation, but they say it's even worse now. That's why we call the holidays Mikra'e Kodesh, which that's what we call the holidays prayer liturgy in the Siddur. It always says Mikra'e Kodesh, which literally means a calling out for a person to get close to holiness, to Kedusha. That's one way of doing it. And that will avoid us getting the neged saras. So basically, what it boils down to is a tshuva me'ava, a tshuva out of love, right? Which is through through spirituality, through mitzvahs, through Shabbos, right? Or a tshuva me'ira, a tshuva out of fear, a punishment when you get afflicted, neged saras. Okay, so that's what comes up. Now, final thing from Rabbi Fran, who says, this can be seen also in the letters of Nega. Nega meaning plague, right? We said is the same as the letters Oineg, which means pleasure. So what's the difference? If you look at those, there's one difference. The Ayin, right, is in a different place. One's at the very beginning, right? And where another one's at the end. Now Ayin, the Hebrew letter Ayin, also means an eye. So it's telling you, what determines if something is a oineg or something is a nega? Something's a pleasure or something's a plague? It's all where you put the ayin. It's all where you put your eye. It's all a matter of perspective. You know, the glass is half full, the glass is half empty. To some people, it's a plague. Other people, it's a pleasure. Some people can come home and complain. You know, the kids' shoes are everywhere and toys and tripping. Keep the house clean. What's going on? Do you know how many people would give to have that problem? How many couples are infertile and would love to have the problem of toys being around, right? So for this person, it's a nega. It's a plague for that couple that can't have children. That would be their greatest onik, tripping over little children's shoes. Okay? It's all a matter of perspective. Right? A person, wherever he's living, he can, you know, wherever, you can say Atlanta, Georgia. Well, it's not Baltimore. It's not New York. It's not Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's true. That's a legitimate thing. But whatever it is, there's probably, for our personality, who we are, might be, we can do certain things here. We can give, I certainly couldn't be given classes in Israel like I'm doing here. You know, because I'm a dime a dozen there. So there's advantages to everything in every situation. But it depends on the ayin. It's where you put the ayin. It's all a matter of perspective. Right? So that's why it says, you know, in Pirkei Avos, you know, an ayin teva. One of the key great things, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked his five students, what's the key perspective, the key character trait a person should have in the world? One of them said, an ayin teva. And he says, I see that's the best. An ayin teva means a good eye, which means to see the good in everything. To see the good in every situation. There was a famous rabbi. He was the rabbi of Rabbi Akiva. His rebbe. His name was Nachman Gamzu. He used to call him, because he always used to go around saying, Gamzu l'teva. This is also for the good. This is also for the good. Famous stories are told about him. Things that looked bad, he says, this must be for the good. He once was sent on a Tom explains the story. He was sent by the king. You know, they were going to do some terrible things to him. And he brought a tribute of jewelry, gold and silver. And he stayed in an inn overnight. And the innkeeper stole it and replaced his basket with sand. He saw it. He was on the way. He said, Gamzu l'teva, this must be for the good. And he got there, you know, and the king thought was insulted. He was going to have him killed. And one of the advisors said, you know, maybe this is the famous, this guy's a Jew. He's a descendant of the great Avraham. And there's a medrash that says Avraham, when he battled the four kings, he took sand, threw it at him, and God miraculously turned the sand into spears and arrows. So he was in the midst of a war, this king. He tried it. He took the sand, he threw it at the enemies, and sure enough, he was victorious. It turned into weapons. So, and they rewarded him, and they filled his basket with diamonds and jewels, and everything was great. I think they repealed the decree on the Jews, whatever it was. So, you know, that was Gamzu l'teva. Okay, that's a matter of bitachon and faith. We're not holding by it. But the idea is, no matter what happens to a person, there's two ways of looking at it. Two ways of looking at everything. Right? If a person loses a job, Baruch Hashem, it must mean a Kadosh Baruch Hu has something better planned for me. Right? He has to move out of an apartment, and move is a pain. You know, it's not a lot of fun. Must mean better things are going to happen at this other place. Whatever it is. I'm in the midst of a move. Okay. I'm not having a good time about it. I'm not a happy camper about this move. Okay. By the way, I always thought this, you know, a great name for this Torah portions. I thought, you know, this Mitzorah can't be touched. No one can touch him, he has to dwell alone. So I thought that would be a great title for this Torah portion, The Untouchables. Okay, sorry. Okay, what else, guys? Now, let me tell you some things about Lashon Hara, since this was mainly what the Torah portion talks about. And to tell you the severity of Lashon Hara and why we're so sensitive to it in our generation. If you think about it, Lashon Hara is responsible, well, the very first sin. The very first sin is the Nachash, the serpent, speaking Lashon Hara on Hashem, to Chava, to Eve, right? So that causes the first sin in the world, right? And that caused the first exile, because Adam and Eve are kicked out of Gan Eden because of it. Okay, next, what do we have? The first exile, you know, of going to Egypt was started by the brother, Yosef's, again, for his level, we don't know what it means exactly, but his Lashon Hara on his brothers. Right? He was sold in slavery, and eventually that brought us all down to Egypt, right? And we're going to have an incident, God willing, that we're going to discuss in class. The spies speak Lashon Hara on the land of Israel, which causes us to wander 40 years in the desert. The very first temple, that exile was because of Lashon Hara. The great King David accepted Lashon Hara from a guy of Tziva on Mephibosheth, the whole story there in Samuel, okay? And the second temple, our exile that we're in, the second temple's destruction, and the Golos of Edom that we're in right now, we know is because of sinas chinam, causeless hatred, which the main quality of that is lashon hara. They go hand in hand. Causeless hatred and lashon hara go hand in hand. Okay. So, and goes on this, and we see that all the tzoras that have happened to us in exile have the pogroms, shmad, all these things we don't know is because of the blood libels, all these things, all because of lashon hara of goyim on us. Right? And it could be that's why Kodesh Baruch Hu is so, you know, we should know what it means to speak lashon hara, because no one's been a victim of lashon hara more than us. Right? No one has suffered more from lashon hara than the Jewish people, so we better be very careful when it comes to each other not to speak it. Okay? We don't need more enemies. Now listen to the Or Chaim HaKodesh, who says, where is it? He says, there's an amazing statement. He says that all the tzoras that comes to Israel during the Golus from the Goyim is all punishment for lashon hara that we've had on each other. So that's the story, lashon hara. That's why. So now let me tell you something else. A person speaks lashon hara, you know what happens? I don't know how this works, and obviously it needs an explanation. But Chovos HaLevavos, which is a book translated Duties of the Heart. It's a classic book of ethics. It's one like the classics. So it says when a person Adam Medaber Lashon Hara al Chaveiro, what happens when a person speaks Lashon Hara on his friend? They take all the mitzvahs of this person, all his Torah mitzvahs, and they give it to the person he spoke Lashon Hara on. And they take all the sins of this guy he spoke Lashon Hara about, and he gets all his sins. He loses all his Torah mitzvahs, and he gets all his sins. Okay, I don't know. It's a very heavy-duty state. I don't know what that means exactly. Okay, I don't know what it means. But it sounds to me like, sounds like it's a good deal. They ask someone to speak lashon hara on you. I don't think that's the way we're supposed to look at it exactly. I think I'm missing the point there. Okay. The main thing here, and the Degla Yehuda says on this, if nothing else, we don't understand all these concepts, but nothing else, we should understand that the power of the word. It says life and death is in the tongue. In the tongue. This is a pasuk, I think, in Mishle. And what's the death that's in the tongue? Lashon hara causes death. What's life? Torah. Speaking words of Torah. Speaking words of Torah gives a person life and can correct lashon hara in a certain degree. I mean, can atone for a certain degree after you passed by your fellow man for speaking lashon hara on them. You don't see from the Jews that they're doing Torah, mitzvahs, they obey the Sabbath. That doesn't impress the non-Jewish world. Not that we're out to impress them per se, but how we act, how we conduct ourselves in business, matters of ethics, not speaking slander, these things, that impress, they can relate to that. You know, because interpersonal relationships were all involved. So that ritual, that they can't relate to. Interpersonal relationships, you can make a big Kiddush Hashem. It's a good example. Anyways, he points out here, Degla Yehuda, going back on this, that no, if nothing else, we don't realize the power of speech. We just don't understand. But I can't go into all the Kabbalah about it. But basically, if you notice, everything in the human body is in pairs, right? You know, you have two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, two limbs, arms, legs, everything. The central organ, there's only two in a man. There's the bris mila and the bris lashon. They're both called a bris. And they're very similar. I can't go into all ramifications, but words are like life seeds. A person just spits words for no reason. It's equivalent, mystically, kabbalistically, to spilling seed. It's not something you can take lightly. Now, the reason is, one of the reasons that a man is described as a speaking being, you know, when it talks about the four different species, right? Inanimate, right? Okay, that's daimem. Plant, someach, animal, chaya, and then man, it doesn't say Adam, it says medaber. Medaber means one who speaks. That medaber, speech, connects. Right, the world of machshava, the world of thought, which is spiritual, the neshama rests above the head of a man, right? It connects machshava to maisa, to action. It connects the world of thought to the world of action. That's what speech does. Now, it's a very profound thing. That's why you find many people that in Israel, they'll do what's called a tanis dibor, a fast from speaking on certain days. That's why you have so many warnings. If you look at Ethics of Our Fathers, siyag l'chachma shtika, the fence of wisdom is silence. Mar b'divarim mevichet, speaking many words brings sin. Right? All the, what's a man's job in this world? To have his mouth sealed. More harm can be done from opening your mouth than anything else. A person has to be very, and we don't, words fly out of our mouth so easily, we don't see the consequences of it. So our parsha, Degla Yehuda, mentions that we see from here an unbelievable rebuke to us that Ein Shum Dibur Enoishi Heilech Ibud, no human speech goes to waste. Everything is recorded, everything leaves its mark. Okay? And he goes on to talks about how it creates, every word creates an angel, right? And an angel also, there's a scribe. In fact, it says this in Pirkei Avos, I believe. There's an angel acts as a scribe and records every word we say. Okay? So, of course, a person could go nuts over this and be very, you know, it's a book called Nefesh HaChayim, which is written by the main student of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Chaim Volozhin. It talks about speech. You know, you'd be scared to open your mouth. You'll be really scared to open your mouth. Okay, so for us, on our level, we have to realize there, besides the Isser, I'm not allowed to have to speak Lashon Hara. You're not allowed to speak Nivel Peh. Nivel Peh is profanity, right? Besides that, there's also this idea of not abusing this precious diamond tool of yours, right? They say the tongue is the quill of the heart. Okay? So, what it means is even devouring the tailing, there's such an idea of not speaking idle conversation. They say, I got to know how to hold this, by the way. They say Rav Salanter, Rav Yisrael Salanter, who was the head of the great Musar movement, was known to be very careful in his speech. And once they caught him outside the yeshiva, they saw him outside the yeshiva, talking to one of the laymen of the community, and is talking to them about what we would consider making conversation. For him, it was idle conversation. So what do you think about the weather today? You think it's going to rain? Don't know. Well, it's beautiful. It's a nice spring. You know, it goes like this. And I guess, oh. So, Rebbe, we know that you're very careful with every speech that leaves your, every word that leaves your mouth. You weigh it before it leaves. It says, they used to ask him a question, and he used to take like 5 seconds, 10 seconds to answer it. Because he would weigh it, how he could answer in the most precise, efficient, and economic way possible. Not to waste one word. So they asked him, here you're wasting all these words on a lot of them. He said, this is a mitzvah. This is different. This is an act of chesed. This person's down. He has a certain problem. He's not someone who's into learning. So I made him feel good by talking idle conversation. So, okay, so it has its place. Okay? But we, unfortunately, you know, it says it's an interesting thing. A person gets tired in everything in the body except the mouth. If you notice when you're tired, you can still ramble on and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. Everything else, you don't feel like getting up, you know? You don't feel like getting up. You're too tired to eat even sometimes. Too tired to eat, right? Too tired to this, to that, to watch TV. You're too tired, right? But to talk, a person never gets tired of. Okay. Okay, last play on words, which has a lot to do with the time of year that we're on. The last play on words is the word saras itself. Now, this Torah portion is usually always read around Pesach time. And this year it's right, it's, you know, Shabbos HaGodol, right? It's, Torah is read. And what's the connection? The connection is that starting with Pesach, the second day of Pesach, you know, we start doing the counting of the Omer. Right? You know that, right? We count 49 days into Shavuos. We connect those two holidays. Right? And Shavuos in the Gemara, in the Talmud, is very rarely called Shavuos. It's always called Atzeres. That's its name, Atzeres. Like Shemini Atzeres, the eighth day of Sukkot, Shavuos is like the eighth day, if you will, of Pesach. It's the culmination of Pesach. Just like Shemini Atzeres is the culmination of Sukkot. In fact, Ramban, Nachmanides, explains how originally the days between Pesach and Shavuos were like a Chol HaMoed, intermediate days. Right? That a festive character to it. Okay. So during this time, hopefully, God willing, we'll be learning Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers. And one of the reasons to learn that is it works on your character traits. And we try to build unity. These, you know, a lot of things have to do with interpersonal relationships, you know, that we want to improve on during this time between Pesach and Shavuos, the time of our physical freedom, and connect it 49 days later to our spiritual freedom of getting the Torah. How? Character traits, interpersonal relationships, unity. Right? It says that when we got to Mount Sinai, we married to getting the Torah, because the only time it mentions that we camped in singular form is there. Yechanu is the language for encamped, plural. At Mount Sinai, it doesn't say that like it does with all the other encampments. It says, Vayichan, we encamped, Rashi says, singular, like one man with one heart. Complete unity. And Hashem said, ah, my children show unity, now it's time to give the Torah. Okay? So it's interesting. The word Atzeres itself means in gathering, to unite, to get together. Atzeres means unity. It's one of the words that's used for unity. As a matter of fact, Shemini Atzeres, you know, it's to gather in, to unite all the influences of the previous days. Okay? So, again, that's, you know, the idea that we mentioned before, Tzeras or Atzeres, but that's what's behind a holiday. All three of the festival holidays, you know, the Shlosh Regalim that we call, we all united and met in Yerushalayim. Right? So the way that we get unity of Atzeres, right, is obviously by not falling to the plague of Tzaras, right, the same letters, which is from Lashon Hara, from lack of unity. We don't speak Lashon Hara, we don't have Tzaras, then we have Atzeres, a unity. That is the main ingredient we need as we're approaching Pesach, which eventually leads us to that 49 days later to Shavuos to accept the Torah. Getting along with each other, not speaking Lashon Hara, not having to do with Tzaras, but instead of having an Atzeres, right, a unity, and coming close to God through Oineg and Atzeres, through the Oineg of Torah and Mitzvahs and the holidays, doing a Tshuva Ma'ava, re-accepting the Torah, right, and therefore Kodesh Baruch Hu will never need to put another Nega on us, another plague, another affliction, because we'll come close to Him through spirituality and not through, you know, afflictions. And that should be the merit of this parsha for us as we're coming into the Yom Tov Pesach. God willing, next week we'll dedicate the entire class to Pesach. Thank you and have a good Shabbos.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.